From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. Along with your call, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about the FDA and their new ruling on trans fats, which really is going to do great benefit in terms of health in our society. And then we're going to talk about the FDA and the fact that they're going to toughen the rule on NSAIDs, things like ibuprofen and naproxen, and what that means to those of us who may get headaches, such as me.
Any trans fats in our recipe?
No trans fats in our recipe. Cucumber snap pea salad. It's wonderful this time of year. Uses cucumbers, uses snap peas. It is delicious and fresh.
To the phones we go now, Zorba, at 800-462-7413. Welcoming a caller in Great Falls, Montana. Hi.
Hello. I'm calling because I discovered a roundworm in my 2-year-old's diaper about a month ago, and I had a few questions about that.
Oh, sure. So roundworm in the diaper. Not exactly what I would call a wonderful thing to find in your child's diaper. Was it moving when you found it?
It was alive.
Yes, yeah, they are alive when you
I
find it.
I felt like I was in a science fiction movie, and I called my neighbor over to look at it just to ensure what I was seeing was real, and she pinched me, so I knew it was real.
It wasn't a nightmare. It was a real thing that you found.
No,
I could just imagine that.
Right,
right.
So
right.
I wrapped it up. I took it to our medical clinic, and the nurse practitioner confirmed it's a roundworm. They sent it for treatment, and he prescribed some medicine for her and also took a stomach x-ray. And I wanted to check with you on what your recommended treatment for this would be, if you have any precautions to completely eradicate the roundworms in the future in my daughter, and also, do you think that this may have impacted her development in any way?
Oh, sure. First of all, why did they do a stomach x-ray?
I think they were looking to see if there was an extensive additional amount of roundworm. They're specifically looking for a whorl of some sort in her stomach that may indicate the presence of a lot of roundworms.
So what sort of an x-ray did they do? It was just a plain x-ray of the stomach? Or tell me a little. The reason why we normally do not do a stomach x-ray with roundworm. We treat roundworm and we usually do nothing else after that. What kind of an x-ray was it? Just a regular x-ray? Did they have her swallow something or anything?
A regular x-ray.
Okay. So first off, I just want to talk about the x-ray for just a second before I talk about the treatment for that. You always want to, when you have an x-ray taken, you always want to say to either the nurse practitioner or the doctor or somebody else, do you need to do this x-ray in order to give the treatment? And the reason that I mention it is getting an x-ray on a child who has roundworm is just not the standard of care. Standard of care is to treat the roundworm and not to expect anything else, because roundworm, frankly, is a common thing that you will often see. So I'm not exactly sure why they did the x-ray. And in fact, I'd probably go back and ask them, why did they do that x-ray? Just because I always worry about radiation when it comes to children and whether or not they really need to have it. So that's one thing. I always look at overtesting. That may have been overtesting. Now, the treatment of roundworm turns out to be relatively straightforward, and there are certain drugs that are approved by the FDA that are useful in treating roundworm. And then what's important afterwards is to get stool samples to make sure the roundworm is gone. That's how we measure it. We measure it through stool samples. Stool samples are really the way we look at things. No other x-rays are necessary. No other treatments are necessary. And usually, with the medication, it's about 95% to 98% effective. As far as development, not at all. Not unless it's really been a long-term infestation over a period of years where your child's growth was affected. How old is your child?
She is 2 years old as of last month.
2 years old?
22 pounds.
22 pounds. So she's had normal development, hits her developmental milestones in a normal way?
Physically, she's up until her last checkup and in the 0th percentile for weight.
In which percent? In the
zero.
So has that been like that? Has she always been in the lower percentile, or did she drop off the curve?
She has always been in the lowest percentile. Uh-huh. And unfortunately, I wish her prior doctor had diagnosed this, but it's so uncommon in Montana. She has always been very low in weight, and she also had a chronic cough for a period of time, uh-huh. which to find out could have indicated the roundworm presence.
Right. No, a cough can be one of the things that occur. So wait, how tall are you? How tall is her dad?
I'm 5'10", and her dad is 6'2".
Okay. So you're both, so you have length in the, you have length, and she is obviously, you know, at 22 pounds, she obviously is weight. How long is she tall and thin in terms of that? What about her length? Is that in the lower percentile also?
I believe as of her last checkup last week, she was in the 7th percentile mm-hmm. for height.
Has she been gaining weight since the treatment? When did she get her treatment?
She got her treatment about 3 weeks ago, uh-huh. and she has gained weight since then.
Okay, so that kind of then becomes the issue. The issue then, moving back to that, is whether or not she's had a chronic infestation. As you say, it's very rare in Montana. And in fact, the roundworms have basically been interfering with her nutrition. So let's look forward from this point on of what would happen indeed if she had a chronic roundworm infestation that then interfered with that. Kids are remarkably resilient when it comes to gaining weight after they have an intestinal parasite. Very, very resilient. And so given the proper tummy, making sure that the roundworm is gone, you know, checking her stool to make sure it isn't there anymore. If part of her being in a lower percentile, in that 1 or 2 percentile or zero, as you call it, less than 5%, she should begin to gain weight and be able to gain height also. But the second question you have to ask is whether or not this indeed is due to the roundworm. That's the other question that I think you have to say. Is she in a low percentile because there's something else going on? And that's where further testing might actually turn out to be a good idea if she doesn't gain weight. Because I would question whether or not the roundworm was solely responsible or partially responsible or not responsible. And from the information you're giving me, I can't tell. So you see a nurse practitioner or a pediatrician?
Nurse practitioner.
Uh-huh. Is there a pediatrician in the group?
There may be.
Mm-hmm. I would see a pediatrician. That's what I would do.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I wouldn't. I like nurse practitioners. We've got them in our office. We've got PAs. They have very good training, not for something like this. You need to have a pediatrician, looks at your daughter, says she's in a low percentile. I'm tall. My husband's tall. I'm 5'10". He's 6'2". She's in lower percentile. What's going on? There's something called failure to thrive, which is just a great big term, meaning that they don't meet the expectations that we're looking at. So she needs a pediatrician. She needs somebody with more training to look at her and then determine if there's something else going on. That's what I would do.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I hope that helps.
Thank you so much for the call at 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, the FDA is cracking down on trans fats.
Well, more than cracking down. So, first of all, we know trans fats are bad. We know that if you go to New York City, it's hard to find a trans fat because they actually looked and said, hey, you've got to get trans fats out of the food stream. And actually, more and more data has been coming up, especially since the early part of, 2000, 2005, 2010, that trans fats are bad for the heart. In fact, in Denmark, they banned trans fats in the year, I think it was 2002, 2005.
Now, let's back up a bit. Tell us about trans fats, what they're in.
So trans fats were actually invented in 1900, long, long time ago. And trans fats were useful because they kept fat from becoming rancid. So the paradigm when they were invented was Crisco. And my mother used Spry, which was cheaper Crisco. And the idea was put it in the cabinet, didn't have to put it in the refrigerator, ready to fry something, put some Crisco in the pan, fry it up. It was a solid, and you could fry pretty much anything. And it was used in a lot of stuff. It was used mostly now in frying fried foods, and it's used in baked goods. And in places like New York where it was banned, they could no longer use that to fry it in fried
foods.
Yeah,
and why is it banned? What's wrong with it?
Well, it's banned because the FDA has now said it causes heart disease. That's what they've said. That basically trans fats, we've been saying butter is bad. Well, actually, when we turned out that trans fats, which are in solid margarine, most solid margarine has trans fats in, are bad. So the FDA said, In the next, over the next 3 years, we are going to phase trans fats out of the food stream. Now, food companies have already started to do that because you'll see a lot of baked goods and it'll say free of trans fats. Mm-hmm. They don't have the shelf life of a Twinkie. As we all know, a Twinkie, which is the paradigm of trans fats, will look like a Twinkie 100 years from now. Yep. And it'll probably taste exactly like a Twinkie, which, by the way, I occasionally have when I go about once a year, I will have my Twinkie.
I've never had a Twinkie.
You have never had a Twinkie? No. Oh, my God. Have you guys had Twinkie? You've had Twinkies? Yes. Yes. Our producer has had Twinkie. Yeah. Our engineer has had Twinkies. Many of our public radio listeners, they may not want to admit it that they've had Twinkies, but they probably have. But they are the paradigm of trans fats. Mm-hmm. So the feds have said you have 3 years to get rid of trans fats. After that, if you have trans fats in the foods you manufacture, you have to come to us for permission to actually put in, to actually use stuff that contains
so
trans fats.
So they're leaving the door open a little bit.
Well, nobody's going to do that. You're not going to sell something. And it has to have a special label, made with trans fats, which the FDA, I don't know exactly what the label says, says may harm your health. Who's going to buy a muffin which says on there, may be dangerous to the health? You may buy cigarettes that may endanger yourself. But a muffin? Come on, you're eating a muffin because you think it's actually good for you or tastes good. It's not going to happen.
All those muffin addicts are going to be pretty unhappy.
Well, they're going to be happy. But they'll still make muffins. They'll make it with.
Oh, I know.
But the real question is, why is the FDA waiting 3 years? In other words, why don't they say, we're going to give you a year?
Yeah.
Well, whenever the FDA makes statements, they actually do it with food manufacturers and their issues with them. So I have a very specific recommendations. If you're going to buy baked goods and they're manufactured, you want to buy stuff that says free of trans fats because that's being advertised. And you want to read the label because the FDA has said a number of years ago, it has to label if it has trans fats. Mm-hmm. And if it has trans fats, visualize it as a Twinkie.
800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hey, hi there. Thank you.
Sure. What's up?
Well, I partially tore my ACL about 6 weeks ago. It hurt pretty bad, so I went to the orthopedic doctor, and he ordered an MRI, and that's how they know it's partially tore. However, there was so much fluid in there, they can't tell, you know, half tore, quarter tore, three-fourths tore, you know, they don't know. So he ordered 6 weeks of PT, which I've been doing now for 6 weeks. Mild stretching and exercising. And at first, I thought it was getting better, you know, tiny bit better every day. But now, I feel like I'm really not much better at all than the very first day it happened.
Mm-hmm. That must be terrible to all of a sudden feel it's been 6 weeks, you don't feel like you've made any progress at all.
Right. I was talking to my much younger neighbor who actually tore hers when in high school. Uh-huh. Her doctor said the same thing. Let's see if it heals through scarring over.
Sure. So in terms of symptoms, it's the pain, everything else, what's going on, pain or discomfort or clicking? What kind of symptoms are you having?
Not clicking. And the reason he didn't think right off surgery is when I hold the knee up, it doesn't fall down. You know, it's stable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it stays swollen. Like every single time I bend it, it especially if I'm sitting for 10 minutes, I stand up and I can't stand for a few seconds. It hurts like the dickens.
Oh, terrible. What kind of doctor is it that you saw?
An orthopedic. So, he's a surgeon. He specializes in shoulders, but I trust him, and he does knees as well.
Yeah, and there are a lot who do more shoulders than they do knees. So he's looking at you, looking at what you have, and saying, "Give it some time. I don't want to go in there and repair it." I mean that. My ears always perk up. A surgeon who doesn't want to do surgery, that is, you know, surgeons, their viewpoint, a chance to cut is a chance to cure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always their viewpoint. So when they don't recommend surgery,
that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. In other words, I'm always on the side of that. So when it comes to healing of our body, especially a bone of any sort or a ligament, it's a 12-week at least. It's not a 6-weeker. It's a 12-weeker. So you're 6 weeks into this, and you're not making much progress. In fact, mm-hmm. from your point of view, you're not making any progress at all. Taking anti-inflammatories at all?
Yeah, I take I try not to overdo that. So about once a day, I know you can do it twice a day, but once a day I take a naproxen 550.
I think I would, you mean over-the-counter naproxen or a prescription strength?
The prescription, so it's 550 milligrams.
Yeah, I would do it twice a day. Phil, this is what I would do if it were my knee. First of all, I take naproxen twice a day. 500, you know, the 500 or 550 milligram tablet twice a day. I would stay on that for a month to 6 weeks, no matter what, because you're not getting the anti-inflammatory dose. You're taking it. You're getting some of the pain relief, but you really need a consistent blood level over time to reduce inflammation and swelling. And your swelling may go down while it's healing if you do that dose. So I'd immediately go to twice a day for at least a month. That's what I would do. And then you're doing physical therapy, like you said. You know, going to the physical therapist and saying, look, this is bothersome. What can I do? And trying to develop a different training program for that, especially using water training. Do you have access to a pool at all?
No. After I do my exercising, mm-hmm. which, by the way, when I do this, she has me doing squats, not, you know, hanging on to, like, something.
Yeah.
And then I always feel so much worse. While I'm doing it, I'm all right. The stretching feels good.
I would go back to physical therapists and I would say I need some different exercises. Now, I have knee problems myself on and off, and when I do squats, my knee gets worse. You know, and I told my trainer, I said, I do it. So there's certain things I don't do because it's painful. Physical therapists look at a program and then they want to know the feedback. And it may be that you shouldn't be doing squats. In other words, mm-hmm. you may be having to do things such as quad sets and other things to do it. And squats may not be the right thing at this time. So you need to get, you've got to go back to your PT or a different PT and say, look, I feel like things are not getting better. I want somebody else to look at it. And I change physical therapists. That's okay. Nothing wrong with it. Just like changing trainers or doctors, I'd go to a different PT. I would take an anti-inflammatory. And I would not look towards any surgery for probably another 1 to 2 months. I would stick in there and with both of those things. Because a surgeon who doesn't want to cut is a good surgeon. That's my recommendations. I'm not saying that surgeons who want to do surgery are bad surgeons.
Mm-hmm.
It's just usually they look at it and they'll say, I think the surgery is going to help. And this surgeon has said, give it some time.
I see him next week, which will be a seventh week. And at that point, we're going to decide, okay, it's getting better. We'll wait some more, or it's not getting better, and we'll do surgery. And that's why I thought, well, I'll ask Dr. Zorba.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I would, if it were me, even if the surgeon, I would go in there and say, I want to give it another 2 to 4 weeks. I want to take my anti-inflammatory, and I want to do a different PT. I would do that. I would do that no matter what.
Okay.
Okay.
Will do. Thank you, Dr. Zorba.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for the call at 800-462-7413. And before we take a break, Zorba, time again to hear from your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. Well, actually, Zorba, we're about to hear from a very covert and specialized subunit of the Grammar Police.
Subunits.
The Spice Police. Today's correction comes to us from Mike of Fort Collins, Colorado. He writes, Dr. Pastor, one of my pet peeves is the omission of the initial R from the pronunciation of turmeric. The correct pronunciation is actually turmeric.
Am I supposed to comment on this? Is that what it is?
You've said turmeric.
Of course. Of course I said turmeric. You know, sometimes there's more than one.
You don't have to comment if you want. I can just go ahead.
No, I'm going to comment.
I mean, you're not required to. You can just ignore the Grammar Police.
If I said turmeric, I can just imagine people saying, was turmeric the same as turmeric? Since turmeric is often a mispronounced word, since obviously this Grammar Policeman said it's actually turmeric. How do you pronounce it?
Well, I don't say it very often, but it's
spelled... When do you ever actually say it outside of the show?
It's spelled T-U-R.
Yes, turmeric.
Why would you say turmeric?
Well,
T-U-R?
Let's go into February. Do you say February?
Of course.
That's what it fits into.
Hey, I'm a radio
Anyone
guy.
Anyone who says February says turmeric. Thank you, Grammar Policeman. Appreciate
if you'd like to spice up our show by calling out Zorba's lousy... grammar. Let me emphasize, lousy grammar.
Lousy is not always lousy.
Send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. Remember, that's Rupert.org.
Cucumber soup pea salad is easy to pronounce, and we're coming up with that next. Our recipe, more of your calls, our medical myths buster later on here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, if you'd like to talk with Zorba, 800-462-7413. But before our next call, cucumber snap pea salad.
Yes. Now, you like cucumbers, don't you?
Yeah.
You like snap peas?
I do.
And you like salad?
I'm a salad eater.
This is the whole thing, cucumber snap pea salad. You know, in the time of year when the cucumbers are plentiful, I find they taste better. You know, when they're new and they're fresh and they're in the refrigerator, I really do find a difference.
I haven't noticed that, but I bet it's true.
Yeah, it's different because the seeds are not nearly as hollow, and especially when they're refrigerated, and I love snap peas. So. Mm-hmm. They're wonderful. So start out with 4 ounces of sugar snap peas.
4 ounces of sugar snap peas.
Preferably at your farmer's market. Always want to use the farmer's market if
you can.
5 ounces of Japanese cucumbers. These are preferably the cucumbers. Sometimes they're called English cucumbers. The longer cucumbers that have fewer seeds, if you have them available.
Yeah. Do they taste different?
They have a different taste to them, and they have a different texture to them. Any cucumber will work. Any cucumber will work. But the long, thin ones will work better. The smaller cucumbers will work better.
Got it. 5 ounces.
You know, I have, you don't know. My grandfather was English, and he loved making, loved having a little garden, and he had cucumbers, and he would use the cucumbers from the last year in his grow. His idea was to grow the largest cucumber he could. I think he wanted to enter the large cucumber contest. He always bragged about his large cucumbers. 1/4 cup of fresh mint, small leaves of fresh mint, they taste better.
1/4 cup of fresh mint,
that's right.
Small leaves only.
1 tablespoonful of a lemon juice, use fresh lemon.
Big tea lemon juice.
That's right, fresh lemon. 1 tablespoonful of extra virgin olive oil.
Big tea, extra virgin olive oil.
1/2 teaspoon salt, preferably kosher salt.
1/2 tea, kosher salt.
Ground black pepper.
Ground black pepper.
Now, I'm going to make an aside here. If people come to my website, zorbapastor.org, I'll give you the link for a pepper grinder that I think is wonderful. I do not own stock in the company, full disclosure. But I love this pepper grinder because you can turn it and you can actually get out gobs and gobs of pepper for cooking. It's a great pepper grinder. And we'll put that, Carl, we'll put it up on the Carl producer will do it. And crumpled feta cheese.
Yeah, crumpled feta cheese. Backing up, I really like the grinding salt idea, though. That ground salt
tastes so much better. It tastes better. And it's the same thing. It's salt, but the chunks somehow, when you grind them, taste different on the tongue. It has a different taste to
it. And I don't think you're getting more salt that way.
No, you're not necessarily getting more salt. It's that instead of the salt being very refined.
It's more concentrated, I think.
It is more concentrated because it is a larger crystal.
Yeah.
It's chunkier, and when it goes on the tongue, it produces a greater sensation of salt in the brain. So it is. It has a different taste to it. I agree with you. Prepare a bowl of ice water. Then bring a pot of salted water to the boil and boil the snap peas. Just cook them for a minute, just enough to barely cook them. Stir them continuously. Drain them and dump them in the ice water to stop the cooking right away and to set the color. Otherwise, the color changes. Then cut the snap peas in half at around a 45-degree angle. Cut the cucumbers at a 45-degree angle. And by the way, when you take the cucumbers and you take off the skin of the cucumbers, you know, with a grater, grater, you know, with a little, what do you call them? Not a grater. You call the peeler, with a peeler.
Oh, okay.
And then when you open, if you're going to open up the cucumber, if it is a bigger cucumber, you want to de-seed it. You want to take your fingers and get rid of all the seeds in the cucumber completely. Mm-hmm. If it's a thin Japanese or an English cucumber, you don't have to do that. So cut the cucumber at a 45-degree angle, turning it about a quarter turn after each cut. You want it to look good.
Mm-hmm.
Add the snap peas and the cucumber and the mint to a bowl. Then in a small bowl, whisk the lemon juice, olive oil, and salt together. And whisking it will really get it to emulsify, just exactly the way I want to do it. Pour the dressing over the veggies. Toss it to coat. Put some freshly ground black pepper on top. Mm. If you want to, a little freshly ground salt, if you feel like doing that. Put a little feta on top. Put it on the wonderful plate and serve it immediately, maybe with a little lemon juice on the side for those of you who want more lemon juice.
Yeah.
It's really, really good
stuff.
Can
I put a little chicken on that if I want
to? Of course, you can put a little chicken on there. It's absolutely, you can put a little chicken on there. This is not, but, you know, that's okay. You could put chicken on, and I could put a little tofu on there. I could put some tofu or tempeh, which is a different type of tofu. You could put, actually, but it would be. You could put a lot, you could put tuna on here.
Yeah.
Or salmon.
Salmon.
In other words,
salmon.
You actually could add a lot of protein to this. You could put a hard-boiled egg on here.
Yeah.
Now that you think about it, this would be a good basis for many things that you would put on. And you could even put fruit on here if you wanted to.
I get this recipe, but I can't remember all the ingredients.
Well, that's because of your age. If you were younger, you wouldn't be able to
memorize. Maybe I can have some help. How can I get more information?
You know, for those of you who could not memorize everything that we're doing instantly, go to zorbapastor.org. You'll see pictures of Tom, pictures of me. You'll get this recipe, a lot of other fun recipes. That's zorbapastor.org or through Facebook.
800-462-7413, the number if you'd like to talk with Zorba. And a listener now, Zorba in Chicago, Illinois. Hi.
Hi, Doc. Quick question. I'm 83 years old, no medication. I have 100% mobility in both of my arms. Now, when I go to bed, within about 5 minutes, if I lay on my right side, my left arm starts to ache. Uh-huh. Very, very uncomfortable.
Okay.
And no matter which position I put it in, it's got that ache, a very, very strong ache.
Uh-huh. And you'd like to know what to do about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why aren't you on a bunch of pills at 83? You should be on 6 to 10 medications. That's what I want to know. There's something wrong with you.
No.
You're too healthy. You should be diseased. Why don't you smoke at a young age and drink too much alcohol and not exercise? Why did you take care of your body? That's the first question I have. You know, at 83, I know it'll shock you. Sometimes you get arthritis at 83, no matter what you do. It's just what happens with the body. Or muscles or tendons just become shorter. Our tendons tend to be different. Our bodies sag. Our skin sags when we get older. The elasticity in the muscles and tendons also tends to go to pot. You know, just goes to seed, doesn't work as well. So I've got a couple of suggestions. First of all, on our website, zorbapastor.org, I'll give some links. I'll look up some YouTube exercises with some links that you can do with exercises and give you some connectors. Because sometimes if you do some stretching exercises before you go to sleep, it can make a difference for the pain. That's the kind of what I would start out with. The other thing I would do is I would add some more little pillows to the bed. In other words, sometimes very small pillows, you can buy them at Target and other department stores. They're called travel pillows often. People put them in the car and they put them in the car to make themselves more comfortable. You can often find them in the automotive section or in the home decorating section. And you put a bunch of pillows on the bed and then sometimes a little pillow on the arm, just under the arm.
I already did that.
But that along with the stretching exercise, I would increase the number of pillows and see if it would help. But the stretching can make a big, big difference before you go to sleep.
Now, let me ask you, caller, if Zorba is to say you should get some help from a pill, medication of some kind, would you take his advice on that?
I would be skeptical. I went to a neurologist. They want to put me on a pill regimen, and I said, no, I'll go to the chief first.
No, go to the chief.
That's you.
That's me. I love it. I love it. The chief first. We'll give you some exercises. That's what I would do. I would not, you know, we give a pill because it's easier to give a pill, frankly, often than to give exercises and see what's going on. You know, it is possible that you're pushing on a nerve, you know, when you're lying down. But once again, stretching exercises are amazing on how they can help the body heal. And I would put a bunch of travel pillows on there, too. Go get other pillows. See whether or not positioning can make a difference. Change the side. Change how you're sleeping. But once again, I'm very disappointed that you're not on 6 to 10 pills and that you actually took care of your body. It's a shame because for people like you, I just am not going to get the business that I need in order to support the Cadillac lifestyle that I actually don't have.
There you go.
Thanks for your call.
And good luck. So no pain pill. You don't want to say a pain
no,
pill.
No. He's 83. He's not in anything. So why take a pill?
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. And now Zorba, Wichita, Kansas listener is with us. Hi.
Hi, y'all. It's 89.1 KMBW in Wichita.
Good for you.
Great station.
Listening.
Great station.
Tell us your favorite program.
Dr. Zorba.
that's the right answer. He had to
that's
think,
That's the right
though.
Answer.
He had to think.
He did not have to think. He was waiting.
He was thinking,
just like,
what's the politically correct answer?
That's not what he was doing. It was just like people are on television. He was waiting for the satellite feed for his radio station to pull in. That's all it was. That's all. He knew right off the bat.
So what's your question?
I've had problems with hernias. I had one, and it was operated on with the laser optic surgery, and then now I've got another one. Mm-hmm. And it seems like every time I do like strenuous work, it'll really start throbbing. And uh-huh. I'll have to like quit working.
Yeah, what kind of work do you do?
Well, mostly labor stuff, you know, moving things, stagehand, mowing yards, whatever.
Is this a recurrent hernia on the same side or on the other side?
This one's down lower. My first one was above my navel.
Above your navel, so it was an umbilical, yeah. An umbilical hernia. This one now is in the groin?
Yeah.
Okay. And they're kind of different in the way that they develop in the body. The umbilical hernia often really is actually something you're – well, they're both are things that you're really born with a predisposition with. But if it's not a recurrent hernia, you just – I think I would just get it fixed – talk to the surgeon who's going to get it fixed. Sometimes they'll put in some mesh if they know that you have had another hernia to give it a little bit extra healing. Meshes can often be very, very useful. Why don't we use them all the time? Because we're putting a foreign substance into the body. We don't like to do that unless we have to. But I don't think I'd give up what you're doing. I think I'd just get it repaired and see how that works. Do you want to do a different sort of work, or are you pleased with what you're doing for your job?
Oh, yeah, I need to do a different type of work. Like free time.
You need to do a different type of work. So how do you approach that?
Well, maybe I've got a Class D license. Maybe I get a job driving a truck.
Yeah. But we have a lot of truck drivers who listen to us. A lot of, you know, truck driving, you're going to be able to, you know, get a job. You won't have to lift. You won't have the risk of hernias. And often that's something that, you know, that we look at as our body ages or as we have problems with our bodies, such as hernias that are surgically. That sounds like a good idea. I think that's a two-pronged plan. One is you're going to want to get the hernia fixed. I mean, nobody wants to sit around with a hernia. It's painful. It's uncomfortable. Eventually, it's going to get bigger over time. There's a small risk and can incarcerate, you want to get a fix. You don't want to get a truss, this old-fashioned thing to push the hernia in. But the other aspect is, you know, does this affect my work and my job? And if I want to change jobs, this is the time to take this. Hey, this is an opportunity to think about something else I want to do. Truck driving is a great occupation. Lots of benefits from it, especially, you know, for people who have been in manual labor such as yourself.
Yeah. And as you go from city to city, you can still hear Zorba.
Absolutely. That's the other advantage. You can listen to us 24/7. In the truck.
Thanks so much for the call. At 800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, let's take an email question from a Tennessee City listener named Pam. She writes, Dear Zorba, more and more, I'm convinced that a healthy immune system is one of the keys to longevity. I get overwhelmed with all of the information on supplements for this and that. Would you please tell me about any good supplements and lifestyle changes that I can make to help boost my immune system? I exercise regularly, but I am horrible at taking supplements. Uh-huh. I'm also overweight, 30% BMI. Thanks for your help.
Well, first of all, I don't think there's any evidence that supplements boost the immune system. You know, with some exceptions, if you have scurvy, you need vitamin C and so on. But I don't think supplements really do very much. I used to be more pro-supplement. Now I just think they're industrialized Mother Nature. So when you look at things, regular exercise, very important for the immune system. We know that. A Mediterranean diet, very important for the immune system. We know that. We know that a more Mediterranean diet is a better diet. Another way is probiotics through yogurt. I think yogurt is great. It's lactobacillus. It is sort of Mother Nature's probiotic out of a capsule, and it tastes pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I would say yogurt is really an important thing to help boost the immune system. And then just, you know, sort of general health. You know, when you're sick, let your body actually do its work with the immune system by not doing too much. And I'll give a perfect example of a dumb, silly thing you can do. Me. Years ago, I remember I had influenza or some kind of flu bug or something. I don't remember. It was like 30 years ago. And I thought, you know, I really feel sick. I think I'm going to go to the gym and sweat it out. Well, that was a dumb thing to do. I went to the gym, got overheated. I got much worse. I was sick in bed for 2 days because what I should have done was said, I don't feel very good. I think I'll go home and not do very much at all. And quite often guys, and especially guy doctors, are actually the worst ones when it comes to paying attention to their body when they have to rest. So the proper time to rest will also boost your immune system because it gives your body a chance to take over.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Some interesting research to talk about. That's coming up next. More of your calls, of course, on our Medical Myth Buster 2, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. If you'd like to talk with Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, the FDA is going to toughen non-aspirin warnings?
Well, non-aspirin is sort of a broad term. NSAIDs. You know, NSAIDs are ibuprofen, you know, over-the-counter ibuprofen and naproxen.
I was going to say non-aspirin means everything.
Yeah, that's right. It's everything. That's right. It includes Tylenol.
It is an aspirin.
And they're not toughening things on Tylenol. Yeah. Well, let's go over different painkillers. We have aspirin, which is in a class by itself.
Right.
It is an NSAID, but it's a very different NSAID. Class by itself, good for the heart. Mm-hmm. That's right. Then we have acetaminophen, you know, which is Tylenol name brand, not an NSAID, used for pain. And then we have ibuprofen and naproxen over the counter. And we have a slew of other drugs that are prescription drugs that are in that category. And then a number of years ago, in the year 2005, the FDA said you have to have warnings on this of an increased risk of stroke and heart attacks and of the over the counter. And this came after Vioxx. If you remember Vioxx, debacle, yeah. Merck and Company, I don't know if they stonewalled the data, but clearly the data was there that showed that. And the FDA has said, we can't tell which NSAIDs may be better and which NSAIDs may be worse. So we're going to have you label all NSAIDs as having an increased risk of heart attack and stroke. So right now they say that these drugs on the NSAIDs may increase the risk of heart attack and stroke. And the FDA has said, no, it's actually not that way. They're going to have them say it causes an increased risk. In other words, they're going from may cause an increased risk to a stronger labeling of it causes and puts you at an increased risk.
That's interesting because cause an increase. It's sort of the same thing as maintenance.
Well, this is the real issue. What happens is the FDA says the data is there, and it really is an increased risk. And when you use the word may, if anyone reads the labels, you say, well, may cause an increased risk, maybe yes or maybe no. Causes, is it increased risk, is a stronger label. Whether or not this will actually translate into a consumer making a more informed decision is really a question.
I can't believe it would.
Right, exactly. That's the point. On the other hand, For healthcare professionals such as myself and physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, other clinicians, we have to now look at NSAIDs and say, well, may now has become causes an increased risk. It's stronger, so we have to be more careful with it.
What does increased mean?
Well, increased means that it's something to take in consideration when you're actually taking it. But you're right. There's a lot of subtlety here. And the real issue is this going to confuse the consumer or actually help the consumer make a decision? That remains to be seen. Nonetheless, the bottom line is NSAIDs do cause an increased risk of heart failure, heart attack, and stroke, and it's something to consider if you take them.
800-462-7413 is the number to call if you have a question for Zorba. And Zorba, a Kingston, Tennessee listener, joins us now. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, my question is about the gut, my gut. I'm having a lot of bloating all the time, pretty much 24 hours. And it doesn't seem like anything I've done has helped it. A lot of pain in my stomach and bloating. And as far as background, I have had recently an endoscopy, which revealed some mild erosion, and then a colonoscopy. But I know there's a lot of inflammation, and I wasn't able to take the acid blocker they wanted me to take because it messes with my bladder. I have IC also. I was just wondering what your take is on how to heal the gut.
Oh, sure.
What can
sure.
I do?
Well, first of all, let's talk about those erosions in the stomach. It turns out they're common. Sometimes the erosions cause trouble, and sometimes they don't. They're just a happenstance finding to what actually is going on. Then you had a colonoscopy as part of the workup, or was it? Mm-hmm. And they didn't find anything on the colonoscopy at all?
No.
Okay. So let's look at your diet. Let's look at things that you take. How much roughage do you get?
I get a lot of roughage
for the
last year. Vegetables, mostly.
Would you call it a good diet, bad diet, middle-of-the-road diet?
I would say it's a very strict diet. For the last year, because of my other problem with my bladder, I've gone gluten and dairy-free, and I seem to be worse.
Has that made a difference when you went dairy-free?
No.
Okay. In other words, things did improve. Because sometimes dairy will do this. That is not an uncommon thing. That actually is a common thing. So you have no dairy, no gluten. Has that helped your bladder, by the way?
Yes.
Okay, good. So it's made a difference. So I would stay with that. I would stay with a gluten-free and dairy-free diet. Have you ever taken Metamucil at all?
No.
Okay. So Metamucil is the husk of psyllium seed. It's considered, quote, a bulk-forming laxative, but it does much more than that. It's really not a laxative that you think of as a stimulative laxative. What it does is it is a very specific fiber that you're actually putting into your gut that can normalize gut flora and make you feel better. So I've got a very specific suggestion. First of all, there's name brand Metamucil, and there's generic Metamucil. The name brand tastes better than the generic. Either one will work. So either buy one or the other. When you get Metamucil, you take a scoop. You start out with one scoop in the morning in a glass of water or juice if you want to. I think water is better. Orange flavored tastes better.
Yeah.
Mix it around. Drink it down right away, because if you don't, it'll look like Jell-O, because it will almost become Jell-O. It's yucky. It just doesn't taste good. I would recommend one scoop in the morning for 2 weeks, and if that doesn't seem to do anything, do either a half scoop twice a day or a whole scoop twice a day. You want your stools, we're going to talk about poop just like Mamet Oz, my friend, you want your poop to be formed but not watery. That's an important part. Over the next 4 to 6 weeks, your gut flora will change from that. Okay. That's what I would do. It's a non-drug way. Metamucil is not a drug. You're looking at basically fiber. You can buy it at health food stores, but I've tried that one, and that doesn't taste good. I would buy the commercial brands.
Okay.
Good luck. Let us know what happens. This type of irritable bowel is a common problem, and we'd like to know what goes on.
And thanks so much for the call at 800-462-7413. And Zorba, time again now for our medical myth buster segment. Today's question comes to us from Anne of West Lafayette, Indiana. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, for the past few months, I have had a lump on the top of my wrist. It is approximately 3/4 inch in diameter and 1/4 inch tall. It's not painful, and it doesn't bother me most of the time. A friend said it was a ganglion cyst and that I should have someone whack it with a heavy book. I searched YouTube, and sure enough,
yep.
You can find videos of people treating Bible bumps by hitting them with a Bible.
That's right.
Now, this sounds painful to me, and many of the patients report that the cyst will reappear. What do you recommend, and is this treatment just a myth?
Bible bumps. The treatment is not a myth. When I first started medicine, Dr. Kellogg had an old medical book, and I was paging through it, and sure enough, on ganglion, it showed you how to actually rupture a ganglion cyst using the corner of the medical book to smash the ganglion cyst and get it to explode. Now, the side effect could be a fractured wrist, which is really not the side effect that you're looking for. And then, of course, there can be recurrences. So if it doesn't bother you, you don't have to do anything with it. That's the first number one step. They sometimes go away on their own. If you come into an office, sometimes you can puncture the cyst, quite often. I do them all the time, and pull out this fluid that is joint fluid that sort of feels and looks like grease. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you put a little steroid in there, it'll keep it from reforming again. And for the stubborn cysts, you can actually have surgery with a hand surgeon when they actually go in, remove the cyst, and keep it from forming, which seems a lot, especially for a bump that doesn't bother you. So what I would recommend is shut off the computer, don't go to YouTube, and see how you can actually do it. If it bothers you, talk to your doctor about having the cyst. Actually, I would just have it punctured with a little lidocaine to make sure it's not painful and have the fluid removed before I would have surgery. And as for using the family Bible, it's probably not the best book to use.
Have a myth for us? Zorba is happy to take a whack at it. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is a listener in St. Augustine, Florida. Hi.
Hello. About 22 years ago, I contracted a virus that went to my brain and damaged my hypothalamus. After that, I had a lot of problems with my endocrine system.
Well, I want to go back. Wait a second. So when did you have the MRI? Because they weren't that common 22 years ago.
Well, that's when it was.
Had one of the early MRIs.
That's correct. And then what happened was my endocrine system began to break down.
Wow.
And
in what way?
My ovaries stopped producing, the pancreas began putting out excess insulin, and my blood sugars were dropping. The adrenals, the cortisone test on the adrenals indicated I had adrenal insufficiency. Mm-hmm. The thyroid had a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole thing was breaking down.
Sure.
And then, luckily, the neurologist determined that it was possibly caused by this breakdown or damage to the hypothalamus, which, as you know, affects the pituitary. Because they work in tandem.
So a lot of things went out of whack.
Right. So the key is, right now, the biggest problem is that pancreas is creating a lot of excess insulin.
Uh-huh. So that was, 22 years ago looking. So looking forward, how can we help you now?
Well, what I'm asking is, recently a nurse told me that more than likely what I wasn't getting because of the breakdown in the hypothalamus is a hormone called lipase, L-I-P-A-S-E. I may not be pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah. Lipase is produced by the pancreas, but that's easy to measure. The real issue is not the fact that the nurse said you may have a lipase deficiency. The real issue is you're having effects an hour after you eat.
Right.
That's the issue. I have a couple of distinct suggestions. First of all, you've got to find an endocrinologist that you can relate to. That's a very important thing. You may need another glucose tolerance test to see exactly what's going on because you've got some symptoms that are just difficult to figure out. The other thing is this. sometimes we can figure out what the symptoms are from, and but we in medicine do not have all the answers. I mean, we didn't have MRIs, hardly any MRIs, we'll say, 22 years ago. Now, of course, they're, you know, as common as you can have. So you may have another problem that nobody can actually figure out. And right. So we make recommendations. The lipase sounds to me to be really off kilter as not an issue that's here. But clearly, how you eat and what you eat can be a big issue. And staying right. on a low glycemic diet does make a difference.
I do that.
Yeah.
And also, what happens is an hour after I eat, and this has been happening for 22 years, the joints and muscles on my right side mostly swell up, and the pain is really bad.
So the most important thing you can do is actually develop that good relationship with the doctor so you can sit down with the physician and figure out what works for you.
Mm. Thanks so much. We appreciate that call at 800-462-7413, 800-462-7413. And before we head out today, Zorba, let's take an email question from a loyal listener named Virginia who listens to the show on KGOU in Oklahoma City. She writes, Dr. Pastor, I am an active 80-year-old woman who for the last few years has been bothered with leg cramps at night. They start after I've been asleep for about an hour, and they are in various muscles in both my legs and feet. Last night, they occurred about every 45 minutes to an hour,
oh, wow.
four times during the night. I got out of bed and walked them out, got a drink of water, and stay up for about 10 to 15 minutes, and then go back to bed and to sleep to be awakened again. I've tried taking 250 milligrams of magnesium daily, but it is obviously not working. Do you have any other suggestions?
Well, I think the magnesium is a good suggestion to use. One of the other things, sometimes old-fashioned remedy is warm milk before you go to sleep, a little glass of warm milk. That can be also very, very useful. Leg stretching exercises, especially of the Achilles tendon, we'll put them on our website, zorbapastor.org. I'll put a connector to the exercises or to a YouTube explanation of the exercises. Those are things to use. And then finally, if that fails, there are medications you may use for restless leg syndrome. The anti-Parkinsonian medications actually work quite well, and this might be RLS. And for some people that works, or other medications that may be working, such as gabapentin. So there are lots of things you can do, but I would try the most benign things, non-pharmacological, first.
Have a question for Zorba? The good doc is always happy to help. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or find us through Facebook.
And, of course, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping for your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0725Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.